Hey friend, it's Karen Parker with the Pursuit of Living Well podcast. I'm a mom of three beautiful souls, a lifelong entrepreneur, and intuitive coach. At 52, I realized that I have known all along that everything I needed to become the best version of myself was already inside. I'm bringing all the secrets to you by sharing what I've learned in my experiences over the years. Also, in this podcast, you'll hear tips and wisdom from some of the bravest people I know. You'll hear their stories of how they took their own leap of faith and learned to live their life in complete joy and freedom. Take my hand as you listen and learn how to rise above all your disappointments, all your struggles, and begin to experience your own joy in the journey. Let's go. Well, I just want to say thank you for joining us here on the Pursuit of Living Well podcast, Erin. Today, I want to just introduce you to everybody. You are actually new to the area.
Yep.
Your name is Erin Brewer.
That's right.
And you are new to the area. And I was drawn to both you and your wife. I can't even remember how I first saw you, maybe through Jess and Jill. I don't remember. Who knows? But you've got a story to tell.
And I do have a story to tell.
And we actually have a lot of things in common. And I'm finding that a lot of the people that I interview, there's a lot of commonality. And ultimately, it speaks to what this podcast is all about. And that is pursuing that life that you've dreamed about with true joy, and knowing where that joy comes from is kind of different for everybody. But you and I are along those same lines, and have some. I can't wait to dig into everything that you have to say. But let me just share with everybody just a little bit of your background, because we are picking back up on the Dad Bods and Beer Guts series. And every time I mention that to men, they look at me like I've grown a third eye, and they're like, wait, I don't know whether to take that as an insult or to laugh, or are you
right? Right.
But I mean, it's a catchy topic.
It is. As a creator in my past sermon series, I appreciate it full well on. I know the value of a great series title.
Cool. Yeah, so we're picking that back up. And I had to bring you on because you're at that age, I remember, of when I started questioning some things of how I was taught, how I was raised, and was like, you know what? I got to go straight to the source to find out what truth is and all of that. So we're going to touch on that, but let me just share a little bit about your background.
Okay.
You grew up in Winchester, Virginia, and you used to work for your parents.
Yep.
You ended up going to Winchester Church of God. You were the discipleship pastor there, and you did media. And then you also founded and were the lead creator at Vivid Go Boom, which is a design and marketing business. So that's cool. I'm going to have to pick your brain another time on that. You were the founder and lead pastor of a Fresh Church. Mm-hmm. And that was back in Virginia, but you moved here last October.
Yep.
And right now you're currently the founder and president of Fresh Faith. And that's another podcast. That's actually a podcast that you have. Mm-hmm. So I just want to start there right now. And then we'll back it up and we'll circle back around to some of those. But let's start right there with the Fresh Faith podcast.
Yeah.
Because honestly, just being real, I've been out of church for a long time.
Okay.
Grew up a pastor's kid, all the things.
Yeah. And my wife is a pastor's kid.
Yeah. One thing led to the other. And I know people are people. Humanness gets in the way.
Yeah.
But what's important is my relationship with God. But I have thoroughly enjoyed the way that you teach what the Bible has to say and how it incorporates into today.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. Just real, I would say briefly, but it doesn't have to be briefly. Talk to me about how you came up with that podcast.
Okay.
What you're doing with it and all of the things, because that's recent.
It is recent. We created it when we moved here. It's how we make ends meet. We had a following from Virginia as far as my teaching went. And so because of that, I continued to teach digitally with the momentum of who I was, more so than where I was. Mm-hmm. And so I just created, we took that momentum, took it online, and it worked because of 2020. And we release it on Sunday mornings just because people were used to me teaching on Sunday mornings. And then it has developed way differently than I had foreseen it going. The goal was to be able to travel and speak at all these pastors' conferences and big conferences that I had attended. And my goal was to be an international speaker. I happen to be very good at public speaking. The more people, the better, the more comfortable mm-hmm. I am. When there is a small crowd, I get really nervous. And so I'm great with, I'm great with that. And it did not turn out like that at all. I think I was carrying some dreams from the past into the creation of Fresh Faith. And now what it is realizing, instead of just leaving the Bible behind and moving on to my own life and leaving all of that world behind, the Bible is still valuable when put in the right context. It's still valuable when properly understood. It's still valuable if someone would communicate it in the way that it was designed to be communicated. And so I feel like I have a gift for that. I feel like my understanding of the Bible and what it has developed to is a gift from God that is to be shared to the world. And so that is why I do what I do. In fact, now I'm just starting through the book of Ephesians right now. I'm kicking it off this Easter weekend, and I've just finished Philippians. And I'm doing something I thought I would never do, which is I'm just going to go verse by verse through these things, and I'm just going to wrestle with the tough stuff, and I'm going to call out the crap that's in it. Like when, let's just throw this out for an example. God says in Exodus, in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not kill. Next book of the Bible, he tells Joshua, I want you to go into the city and I want you to kill all the children, all the women, all the men, leave nothing living behind. So which one's true? Right. If God never changes and he's the same, did he say don't kill, which is a great thing to say? Or did he say go kill all these innocent people, which is a terrible thing to say of a good God? And maybe we have to come to the realization that it's true. God does not desire us to kill people because that's not loving your neighbor as yourself. And it's true that Joshua thought that's what God told him to do because that's the culture in which they experience God, which goes to prove that God did not write the words of the Bible. Man wrote the words of the Bible and what they were experiencing from God. And so they wrote from their perspective, much like we do today. But because it was in very Jewish, and the whole thing is built in a Jewish context, which we also forget. And so because of that, we wrestle with tough stuff. So my goal is to go through those rough spots, and instead of being like avoiding them, go through the stuff and let's talk about it. Let's talk about the things that it says that we do disagree with and put it in its original context of what was really happening. And so when I do that, it just works.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that we went there like right off the bat, because that is my, people that know me know that I know the Bible very well.
Right.
Wrapping your head around what you learn in seminary or what you learn from people from the pulpit or the concordance that went down and broke down, you know, all of these things.
Yeah.
All of that is man's opinion or view of what was written. Yeah. Nobody really takes the time to figure it out on their own. That's what right. God's saying to them right now, in this moment, now.
Yeah.
And
yeah. That's so true. Yeah. Like I just finished a book that I'm writing that wraps all of that crap up. Yeah. And it's called You Don't Have to Believe to Belong. That's what the book's called. I'm about to release it. I'm about finished editing it. In it, which is not going to be popular with anybody from my past, but in it, I come to a point where I just say, look, I'm just going to say it. It's out there. Theology is theory. And they don't like it because they think it comes straight from the Bible. And it's really their interpretation of what's being said. They're reading between the lines. And a lot of times I think we do that incorrectly. But anyway, it's theory. You're right. It is theory of our interpretation. And then what happens, I was listening to a podcast this morning by Richard Rohr. If you don't follow Richard Rohr and you're interested in these types of conversations, he's unbelievable. He comes from this super traditional, he considers himself like a Franciscan. He's a father in the Catholic Church from the Franciscan order, which is interesting because they would never claim him Mm-mm. in his ideas, Mm-mm. but he's fantastic. And it's R-O-H-R is how you spell his last name. And he's a genius. He has this most, his famous book is called The Universal Christ. And then he's now releasing another book. Anyway, I was listening to this podcast and he talks about how there is a lot of times we worship the map to get to God. And he says, there's a lot of maps of depending on where you start from, of how to get to this place that we call God. And he said, you know, we worship our map as the Bible. We worship the map instead of eventually when you get to God, the map doesn't do you any good anymore because now you need to put him on. You need to walk that out instead of relying on the map. And I think the map is great for context. I think that oftentimes we never get to experience the fullness of a relationship with God like Jesus got to experience when he was fully God, fully man. We never get to experience that father-child type of relationship with God that is always explorative and discovering and always full of love, never full of condemnation. Even when we screw up, it's that soft, hey, yeah, you screwed up. Let's do better tomorrow. And always, it's about progress, not perfection. That is what it looks like to walk. Most people never get to walk that out because they're so obsessed with the map that they never get to thrive in the destination.
So good. So good. Man, we went deep really fast, really quick. So I want to, perfect. It lines up where I want to take it back to because we didn't just arrive at this place of
That's correct.
Knowing. Okay.
Right.
So I want to take it back. I want to take it back to little Aaron.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now talk to me about Winchester, Virginia. What was life like back then?
So there's a book written about Winchester, Virginia that's called Deer Hunting with Jesus. And it's a guy that left Winchester, went to live in the real world, and then wrote about what people could experience because he went back to Winchester and just started writing of like, oh my gosh, nothing's changed. 20 years later, nothing's changed. Like everyone is still in this small circle of thinking. Everyone thinks the same way. The roads are still the same. And the whole point was it is the concept of people get in this systematic way of thinking. And he means it kind of a, you know, it's that rural, theological, very conservative Southern Baptist type of place. I was raised Baptist. Okay. And so I went to the same school, which was a Christian school, kindergarten to 12th grade. My brother did the same. Yeah. So 13 years at this place. I was also there on Saturdays because if you played one sport, you played all sports. And then on the weekends, you coached like the little league sports that happened on the weekends at this place. And so I was there. I would have been there 6 days a week, but then we went to church there Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. And so I was there 7 days a week from seventh grade to 12th grade. In elementary school, I was there 5 days a week, 6 days a week if I participated in the weekend, you know, activities that they had. But I mean, I was there all the time. That was my life. It was the gospel was presented this way. The gospel, or what we called the gospel, the meaning, here's the story of God to you. And it was, everyone's going to hell. You're Unless. Going to hell.
Yeah.
and apparently that's good news. It's good news is that Jesus gave his life for you. And if you will repent of your sins and pray this prayer, you will spend forever in heaven with God. And the whole goal was to get you to pray that prayer. That was it. And there's a lot, it was all fear.
Right.
If you don't do this, this bad thing's going to happen. Well, who in the hell is going to pick hell over heaven? Like what in the world?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh yeah, sure. Let me sign up. Like, and you're scaring these kindergartners. Like they're preaching this to little Aaron.
Yeah. Yeah.
From kindergarten to third or fourth grade.
Yeah.
And I was in it, man. I went to the camps. If you're 99% sure you're saved, there's 100% chance you could be lost. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Like this guy, Randy Hoag, was an evangelist. He preached this sermon one night called Elevator Ride to Hell. Seriously. And he like scared the living hell out of you when he preached this like fire and demons and all of this stuff. And I remember being so scared. Like it was so bad that I remember bawling my eyes out. Because it would play on your emotions. Right. And I bawled my eyes out at this Christian camp when I was 13 years old at Liberty University, which was very small then. But I was in Virginia, so it was close by. And we would go to camp there. And I remember crying bawling my eyes out, because after realizing what they were telling me and believing that it was true, my grandmother, who was faithful church member, usher, my grandfather was an usher with her and she helped. And for years in the local Pentecostal church, the Assembly of God church, where in our hometown, because she was not Baptist, in my mind, she was going to hell. And I was crying about it, because I was taught that not only is this the only way, we are the only ones who are right. Everyone else is wrong. I was taught exclusivity of the gospel, as opposed to, I mean, they use John 3:16, which is very inclusive. God loved the world, right?
Right. Right. And, but then they start chipping at the...
That's right. And so although it's very inclusive in its design, I was taught a very exclusive version of it. I mean, that's what I was taught. So I was there. From there, I graduated high school from the Baptist little school I was at. I went to a 1 year, even more conservative Baptist-based Bible Institute. It was in Hudson, Florida, a branch off of the New York location called Word of Life Bible Institute.
Yep, no, exactly.
And it's 1 year. Yep. And I went there, graduated. So strict, man. Guys had to walk on one side, girls on the other. You couldn't be together walking down the street after a certain time. I had to wear a tie to class every day in Florida, long sleeve shirts. You could not wear a short sleeve button. Now, it was crazy, like nuts. I got in trouble one time for going to a Calvary Chapel church, which is like straight, everything they do, they just preach from the Bible. Like it's very heavy Bible based. And I got in trouble for going there because it didn't have the word Baptist in it. And I was like, it was crazy. But I feel like that regimen was actually at that time good for me, helped me become disciplined. But then I graduated from there, went to Tennessee Temple University in Chattanooga, Tennessee, graduated from there with a 4-year degree in a pastoral ministry, minor in theology, took seminary classes while there, met my wife, who is a Pentecostal preacher's daughter in the Church of God. And so I ended up after I graduated college and from Chattanooga, went to, we got married in May of 2009. And then that fall, because I graduated in December of 2008 from college, got married May 2009, went to Pentecostal Theological Seminary in Cleveland, Tennessee in 2009. I was a seminary dropout. Went there for one semester. We moved there. It was like, nope, can't do it. Moved back home, worked for my parents. Got hired by her dad at the Pentecostal church.
That's where my kid's dad grew up, Cleveland, Tennessee.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. So
interesting.
Exactly where you're talking about.
Yeah. I met a guy, this is random and off topic, but I met a guy here the other day, Cleveland, Tennessee, went to school there, everything. And I met him at the Growler. And he was like, I won't tell if you won't tell.
That's funny. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. You got married. You went on to, let's fast forward a little bit, because something in you decided to walk away from the Baptist theology, so I went, to speak. So,
and it was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And her name was Andrea. Yeah. And so that's all it took, man.
Right.
It was problematic for me, to be honest. It was quite a journey. Being raised Baptist, crying over my grandmother, who I thought was going to hell because she was Pentecostal.
Right.
I meet Andrea. I start going to her church because why not, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I was scared to death. I had a 4-year degree in combating Pentecostal theology. I could tell you why they were wrong and this and that, just as much as they could tell you why I was wrong in that. But whatever, I had been taught our version of it.
Right.
And so I remember one morning sitting on the front row, decked out, man, 3-piece suit. Like I was always like that. And now you can't catch me in it. But I remember sitting on the front row with her and praying, like, dear God, please don't let the Spirit move today. Right. Like, and I remember, oh my gosh, what a terrible prayer.
Yeah.
So at that point I realized, like, okay, I'm an idiot. I'm just going to let what is it be. And I fully embraced it. Right. Like, so I fully embraced the Pentecostal theology going from Baptist to Pentecostal. So much so I became the youngest ordained bishop in the Church of God ever in the history of the Church of God. They changed it from 30 to 25 that you could only men, by the way, but you could,
from
30 to 25. And the moment they let it go, I was immediately ushered into that as the first 25-year-old to be a bishop in the Church of God, which is the highest level that you can be because I was all in it and I was pursuing that. And it ended up, I've since turned in my credentials, but I was all in.
Yeah.
And I started from there asking tougher questions.
Right.
I remember we were sitting in General Assembly, all the pastors together, we're all voting. The men are inside a cloth fence.
Yep.
The women are outside with kids and some men that don't have the credentials to be in. No women, all men. We're sitting there like elitists, like you got to show your badge to get into this little voting space.
Mm-hmm.
And they read, I remember sitting there and they, and I had a picture of it that I posted on social media because I was so proud and now it makes me sick. But I remember they took a, they read their affirmation of where they stand on biblical marriage. And it wasn't where they stand and what they're for. They read what they were against,
right?
Not what they were for.
Right.
And I remember the room stood, the whole room, thousands of people stood and applauded for minutes. They would not sit down. Mm-hmm. And I took a picture and I was like, this is what we stand for. Blah, blah, blah. Like that was me. And I remember like, and I am so ashamed of that looking back now. Like, I am so horrified by owning that and being a part of that. Because if we weren't making a statement about this is what we believe and this is what we believe the Bible says, we were making a statement of this is who is out.
Shame.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And we applauded it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in it. I mean, I was there. And I was proud of it at the moment, at the time. And I started, after that, I started asking around 2015, that was like 2014, 2012, between there, 2015, 16, I'm on staff at my father-in-law's church. I came on staff. I don't say this to think it was all me, but I came on staff. I had this media expertise, which is what they hired me for. Right. I developed it all there.
Right.
And I branded the church, created branding, created this live stream and camera action. We put light, we did the whole, like we became traditional, like very archaic traditional to very mm-hmm. modern, very fast.
Uh-huh.
And we grew from 750 people, which was big in Winchester, mm-hmm. attending to 2,200 mm-hmm. by the time I left in 2014, mm-hmm. which I didn't leave, but I was there. And I started asking tough questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, what about these tough things that we're dealing with in scripture, like back in Exodus?
Right.
Or why is there a lesbian couple coming and sitting? I don't know why they would come to church here when we preach against them every week, but they're sitting there, they bring their kids and we take their money.
Yeah.
We'll accept their checks, but we won't let them serve.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's problematic to me. They can't join the church.
Behind the scenes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They can't join the church. They can't dedicate their children to God. When we do child dedications, mm-hmm. they're not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
When the child dedication has nothing to do with them, the child, right. like,
yeah,
but we'll take their check and we'll cash it. And it's problematic to me.
Yeah.
And so when I started seeing a little bit of that, I just as some examples, and it wasn't there specifically. That's a very specific example.
Right. Right.
But I'm seeing that everywhere in Winchester. And I'm just, I have problems with it and I'm asking questions. And so I just felt this, and all the while I have this desire to preach. Like that's what I want to do. I felt like I was great at it. I was very green, but I felt like I was great at it. I wanted to do that. I have a voice. I wanted to be heard. I feel like I have a unique, you know, presentation from God to give.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I was leaving. Mm-hmm. Like we're gonna go. I was real interested in this church in Charlotte called Elevation Church. And yeah. so, yeah, even. They called us up and I reached out to them, was asking some questions and they knew who I was and I knew who they were. And they wanted us to start a location for them in Virginia. They wanted this thing to, they wanted to hire us, but in order to hire, yeah.
Yeah.
So in order to hire us, we had to move there for 6 months. And then if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And so I remember we were sitting in a Starbucks parking lot and Andrea said to me, I did go down and I checked it out. And then we were talking mm-hmm. about it later. And she said, what's better about the people in Charlotte than here? Like, why don't you just take that and bring it here? You're not going to get to preach there anyway. I mean, they have, right. you know, that's not the way it's designed. And in right. my opinion, they have one of the greatest communicators on the planet.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, I mean, I'm a fantastic communicator. And so I realized that and was like, you know, if that's really my desire, this is just putting a Band-Aid on a deeper desire that I mm-hmm. have.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended up telling my father-in-law, hey, you know, can we take over your downtown location? They had a main location. They had a location in a neighboring town called Front Royal, Virginia, which is a little bit closer to DC than Winchester, not much, but they also had a downtown location. They were streaming. I had set it up for them to be able to stream their service mm-hmm. into their food pantry.
Uh-huh.
And there was a makeshift sanctuary in there, a small room with some chairs, about 30 chairs. And no one was showing up after 3 years of doing that. Right. And so like 3 people would show up right. so much so that I went there to check it out to like, let's see how many people we're working with here. And no one was there but me and my daughter, Andy, mm-hmm. at the time I took mm-hmm. her with me. She was two. And nobody was there. It was bad. And I said, what if I go there and we really amp that up? And I preach there. Andrea does music. She leads the singing there. We just take it over and build it, and it becomes in person.
Right.
That'd be awesome. That'd be great. So we rebranded it. I worked really hard on branding it. We called it Afresh, came up with the slogan, "You don't have to believe to belong." It just became this, it was great.
It took off on its own. Yeah.
You know, branding was my niche. And so we had the right name. It had to start with an A, because there's Aaron, Andrea, Andy, Aisley, Avi, and not Avi didn't exist yet then, but had to be an A. And so we had the right name. We had the right branding. It looked fantastic. We had the right sound. We were heavy on production. Yeah. Lights, camera, action. We had smoke in the air. I mean, it was cool when you walked in. We didn't, you know, like edgy churches today, you know, they're mm-hmm. playing like upbeat Christian music when you mm-hmm. walk in. We mm-hmm. did not. We mm-hmm. played Justin Bieber and Drake. Yeah. And I mean, you might have heard a curse word or two walking in from the music. We played it going out. We just wanted to be different to show people, hey, you belong here. No matter who right. you are, where you come from, you're going to realize that this isn't walking into church. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be very different. Mm-hmm. And so we created this slogan, "You don't have to believe to belong." And we got so many questions from.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh. What does that mean? In fact, I was running one day, and we were 2 weeks in. I was running in my neighborhood, and there was a church at the end of my neighborhood, a real conservative Baptist church. And someone told me to listen to their podcast. So I listened to their podcast or the sermon from the week before. And the whole thing was, yes, comma, you do have to believe to belong. And the whole thing was, there's a church in town that, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. I found that flattering that they would care enough to preach about us. But anyway, we started this. Well, it was all great. 3 months, we had outgrown the facility and had to move to a new facility. We had 32 people the first Sunday. And when we launched January the 15th, 2017, and then by March, we had moved on Easter Sunday at the end of March, we had moved to, you know, White House products, like the food, like applesauce.
Yeah.
White House, they are in Winchester. And Mr. Gum, who owns it, goes to my father-in-law's church. They moved out of their office building, which looked like a warehouse. And he was like, "You can set up in here for free." And so we did. And we launched there on Easter Sunday, 2017, 3 months later. Big building. It was awesome. 25,000 square foot. It was amazing.
And this is just like a little over 3 years ago.
Yeah. And so we had 185 people that Sunday. We were so ecstatic. We're still a campus of my father-in-law's church. So it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't stay there. Obviously, it went back down because we were hitting after that. We stayed right at 100 for a while.
Right.
Got it up to about 150 by May of 2018. I had a conversation with my father-in-law because I got pulled into the office. We had some gays who were showing up because they didn't have to believe to belong. And there was nowhere else to go in the area that wasn't stale, right. if you will, right. the normally right. affirming yeah. churches. And yeah. so yeah. they wanted something that was great and fun, but also affirming. And so mm-hmm. they show up, and there was no problem with them showing up and giving.
Yeah.
It's a campus of my father-in-law's church. Of the Church of God. They wanted to serve. No problem. Go outside and hold that sign and with all the other people and wave the flags and like, "We're here. We're doing church. Glad you're here." Like, they're holding signs to say like, "World's best cup of free coffee." Or like, right, you know, right. "You yeah. look great today," with like a little kiss emoji, like cute stuff that was just fun. And they're just getting people into the parking lot or getting yeah. people to beat their horns and making a fun buzz about it. Mm-hmm. You got to pass our location to get to my father-in-law's location when you're coming from downtown. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, some older parishioners, I'm assuming, "Did you know there are some gays outside holding signs going to the church?" Mm-hmm. And I got called in the office, and he's like, "You know, I appreciate the heart of it, appreciate everything, but you can't serve at this church, volunteer at the church without being a member of the church. To be a member of the church, you've got to sign the statement of faith of the Church of God that affirms the biblical, you know,
yeah.
marriage and all of these things that say you also believe in all of the Pentecostal doctrines. And if they can't do that, they can't serve." Mm-hmm. And so that we can't have this because it's representative of the denomination. I was mad. I was this and that. It came out. I was not happy. A couple of weeks later, I had another meeting follow-up. He thought I was coming to apologize. I was not. And
that's where the tables turned.
That's where the tables turned. And I said, "I'm going to err on the side of people.
Yeah,
I'm going to lay down my preferences for the people Jesus laid down his life for. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, I struggle with all this anyway, and the belief system here. And I'm just at the point where now that I'm really with people, pastoring people, I'm on their side. Like, mm-hmm. I'm with people, not with these ideas mm-hmm. that sit out here that we think the Bible, like I'm with them. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be with them. And I'm just going to turn in my credentials. Like, I don't back this. Like out of pure integrity, the denomination thinks that I'm one of their ambassadors out here. They're, you know, I'm licensed by them. I'm supposed to be doing their thing.
Right.
I don't stand behind it anymore. I am shifted. I'm proud of shifting.
Yeah.
I have shifted. I'm okay with that. My story is always evolving. I'm never going to be the same person tomorrow that I am today. I'm great with that. And so I turned in my credentials. Well, you turn in your credentials and you can't pastor this church anymore. You know, well, great. I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we basically just took the church, we split basically. We took our church separate. I think one person ended up going back to their church mm-hmm. and still attended ours. All this, that was May 2018 that we became our own.
Okay.
Right? That was May.
Yeah.
2018. Yeah. We were having about 145, 150 people.
Right.
That Christmas of May 2018, we had over 500 people. Mm-hmm. And then 2019, fast forward a year and a half to 2020, mm-hmm. and we had 650 people that would call our church home. Mm-hmm. We grew from 150 to 650 in 18 months.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the doors flew open at that point. Mm-hmm. And so there was no restriction. We hit the gas pedal, and it was a big ordeal. It was very successful up and to the right. Everything was going really well. It was so great. I would step out of my car and security team would meet me at my car. I would go in, grab some coffee. They would usher me downstairs. I was in a green room, checking on some stuff. I mean, I had security at the stage beside me. I would go, it was crazy. I didn't ask for any of that. They designed it, but that's how fast it grew. And like, things were way out of my comfort zone at that point.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
You said in all of this, in this pivot, because I want to, you had so much success so fast.
Yeah.
And we don't have to go through all of the, you know, like the details to how that happened. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe that when we let go and let God, then he's the one that moves and it all falls into place.
Yeah.
But with growth, sometimes you don't always have to have struggles with growth, but right. with growth, sometimes you can have a struggle. You could have a little hiccup, or God can say, yep, did good, but I got you time to put the lid on, time to move yeah. somewhere else. And one of the things that you said was that there were selfish decisions made that burned mm-hmm. your family for yeah. the betterment of organization. And absolutely. I can about 99% guarantee mm-hmm. that that is so normal mm-hmm. in situations like that.
Yep.
And the fact that you came to that conclusion so quickly and made the pivot, I applaud you. Mm-hmm. But that does happen a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about in just churches. I'm talking about in everything in life, in anything. That's mm-hmm. it's kind of normal. How else do we learn, you know? So yeah. what was it that made you say, okay, time to move?
So let me tell you some of the bad decisions I made.
Okay.
Most of them, not all of them, but most of them revolved around this is, you know, I told you Andrea was our worship leader. She's fantastic. Right. She's mm-hmm. unbelievable. So she was our leader, and she got pregnant with Avi. And so she had transitioned that out a little bit, and then she tried to get back into it. Mm-hmm. From the get-go, for whatever reason, we started the church in 2017 and it was her dad's church.
Right.
Which might have aided some of this, but uh-huh. seven families as we started it with. So not very many people. From the get-go,
right.
there was this tension with her where she just got no respect. Mm-hmm. At all. Zero. Zip.
Oh, your daddy's daughter.
Exactly. It was almost so much fear of thinking entitlement, mm-hmm. not realizing the oppression that a pastor's kid really has of being muted and being formed and being molded and shut up and put in unfair expectations and standards held to mm-hmm. and things said behind closed doors that people don't know.
Yeah. And a lot of it's underlying.
Yes.
That, and you feel it. And a lot of times being a pastor's daughter, mm-hmm. you feel it and you know it and you hear the whispers and you hear the tent or you feel the tension. But yet if anything is ever addressed, like, oh no, we would never.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And so all of those expectations of that are there still unfairly, but I let leaders and I let people around, you know, you don't have to believe to belong. And we judge no one except for my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I let them, I stood there and walked physically. I was there. I was present in certain circumstances where she was treated like shit.
Yeah.
And I let it happen. And I did not say a word.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything. I let it go. And I was like, well, for the betterment of the organization, you know, I can't be taken up for her because in this role, she's a volunteer. And now I'm not taking, like, what in the world? And there were times where we would talk about it and then I would step up and, you know, call somebody out on it in this very weird way. And I felt the tension and I could tell that they were thinking it's my wife. And that's why. And so it was very uncomfortable, but they would say things and I would let it slide and they would. And she eventually, this is how bad it was. She was so pushed out that in 2020, she never stepped foot inside the church that we pastored until the Sunday that I made her show up. Made is a bad word. I convinced her to show up to say goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was it. She suffered. We suffered. Our family suffered. A lot of people, I was consulting with a church here locally and the pastor here said, I was kind of just telling him, he was like, yeah, I don't want to be nosy, but why did you give that up? And I was like, well, I made some decisions that cost my family, but I did it for the betterment of the organization. And I wasn't willing to live with that and whatever. He was like, oh yeah, you know, my wife has the green light to tell me anytime that the church is taking too much of my time. That was not the problem.
Yeah.
My time was not the issue, which is an issue for a lot of guys where they spend a lot of time at work. Not my problem. I am great at taking a little bit of time and making it go a long way. Yeah. That was not my issue. So it's not like I was spending 60 hours doing church work. I wasn't. Right. I probably spent 10 hours doing church work, minus Sundays when I would get up really early. My girls would love it. They go with me. I had this massive breakfast that we would just show up to like every Sunday.
They had your systems in place.
Oh yeah. Everything was great. Yeah. And so I had it to where I really involved people around me, dispersed a lot of the weight. I only had one other employee of a church of 650. It was me and one other person, and she was our youth pastor and kids pastor. And now she is the lead pastor, which is really cool. I was proud of that transition, but like, that wasn't the case. I was home with her.
Mm-hmm.
It was that I was willing to make big decisions that, for instance, here's another example. We need to start. I was preaching 5 times on a weekend at one point, because just to fit people in the building.
Right.
And so we needed to make a third experience. This is when we jumped from 2 experiences to 3 experiences. We had 2 on Sunday morning. Are we going to add another one on Sunday morning, another one on Sunday night, or another one on Saturday night? She was like, Saturday night. No one else does it in the area this way. It's going to be awesome. I was like, all right, great. Our kids pastor, who is also a woman, a girl, she is 25 right now, 26. Mm-hmm. She's young, leading this organization. So cool to watch her story and where she came from. But so she is also in on this conversation, very closed door conversation. I kept everything small.
Right.
And so she is in on this conversation with 2 other guys and me. And she says Saturday night. I had no opinion. The 2 guys said no, Sunday night. And the 2 guys won because I let them win, because I didn't want to come across as playing this. Everybody has an equal voice.
Mm-hmm.
When I wanted Saturday nights,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't willing to even side with her. And that's just one example, which sounds like it's not that big of a deal until those things are the way that you make decisions. Every decision you make, she has no voice. She has no opinion. She might have one, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
In fact, if she says something, you might pick the opposite just so it doesn't look like.
Do you feel that comes from
my Enneagram
the years? No, I know. The years of training of quieting the female voice, yeah,
big time
in church.
It also came from, I mean, this is really transparent, but it also came out of fear of maybe a little bit of me, but I think of protecting my wife from her mom and dad's.
Mm-hmm.
Because if my mother-in-law says something, that's what's going to happen in a church.
Yeah.
It does not matter what it is. Yeah. And she serves on the worship team just like Andrea did, and on their worship team, and plays the piano. But if she makes a decision, you better believe that the pews are going to be black and white next week instead of whatever color tan that they are now. Like if she, I mean,
yeah,
because,
yeah.
And I'm not saying it should always be that way, but it should never not be right. That way. Like she has a voice. And I guess a lot of people know that and fear that of her. Mm-hmm. I feared that maybe of Andrea, maybe that was underlying there. Yeah, in addition to, I was taught, especially in the Baptist church, when I was at Word of Life Bible Institute, there was missionaries, man and wife, and he was teaching Bible class to us. He invited her up to share a story about about some children in Uganda or wherever they were being missionaries to. She got up and started speaking, and I, along with every other male in the class, stood up, turn around and walked out because we didn't believe. I know, I'm so embarrassed, but that's who I was.
Yeah.
And that's who I was raised to be and taught to be and trained to be.
Yeah.
Now, a lot to say about that, but
that's another podcast and I will totally be on.
Yeah.
With
I have a lot to say
about that. Yeah.
About misogyny in the church. I have so much to say about that. Yeah. But anyway, and those types of things that were trained in my mind. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that might have had something to do with it. Having said that, when we established our church, I think in theory, I tried to combat that, but in practice, I failed. For instance, I made sure we had different ages, different colors, and different genders on our board that ran the church.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times when we have that at the forefront of our thoughts, mm-hmm. and we're trying to combat that, we actually are drawing that issue more into the circumstance mm-hmm. that's at hand.
Yep. That's exactly
and
right.
Yeah. So I want to fast forward. You guys moved and mm-hmm. you also made some decisions about how you really wanted to create a life, I guess, here mm-hmm. on the coast.
Yeah.
There is something to be said about the words that are in the Bible, be still and know. Mm-hmm. And I want to touch on that because you do have a different way of seeing the Bible,
yeah.
of seeing God in general. How much of that did you research and did you poll the audience, or mm-hmm. how much of that was the you getting into the being still and knowing?
Yeah, there was no polling the audience with when it comes to my relationship with God. I certainly listened to and broadened my perspective. I don't listen to people that I agree with 9 times out of 10. I don't do that. I learned that from Stephen Furtick, who's the pastor of Elevation Church we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Like I learned that from him early on was mm-hmm. listen to voices that you disagree with because you can always take something from anybody. Mm-hmm. And so I learned that and I would listen and I still listen to people even from where I came from. It's very seldom are there truths that I'm pulling out from there, but I can still learn something from everybody. And so I value that. I think a lot of it, honestly, a lot of it, this is going to sound like a plug for, and it is a plug for the Crystal Coast, but when we were walking on the beach and because we were very conservatively raised, if we come to the beach with my parents or her parents, they would watch the kids for a couple of hours and we would walk from Coast Guard Road at the end of Emerald Isle
yep.
to the pier.
Yep.
And back. And so what we would do is we would go to Food Lion, go to the refrigerated section, grab a bottle of wine, which was a no-no for both of our families, right?
Right.
And we would like throw it in a Yeti and we would share it on the way down to the pier and on the way back and go to that little Surf's Up place, uh-huh, the restaurant uh-huh. up there and hit up that bar and come back and just enjoy to walk together. And it would come to these deep conversations. This is how I feel about the church or, because again, we were vacationing here mm-hmm. at the time and these deep conversations where Andrea's always had not a rebel understanding, I would say, but this more open understanding of it all and just appeased me in my beliefs and watched how they, I would say grew. Mm-hmm. Some people would say shifted, but these deep conversations with her, she is the biggest influence I have when it comes to my theology. It's more of a learned experience with God. And I think the bigger questions we ask, a lot of people put God in the box of the Bible. And when you are limiting your questions and limiting your answers to what is in the Bible, another shameless plug for my book, is the Bible is not meant to give you answers. It's meant to teach you wisdom. If you are looking for answers, you will always come up shorthanded. But if you're looking for wisdom, it can be applied in any part of your life. And so we go there looking for answers, and instead of being okay with the words, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And the bigger questions we ask, the more ridiculous our beliefs actually become when we put them in context. And let me tease out one real quick. If you
go
don't
for
know.
It, go for it.
The earth is, there are, we have discovered not just like we're a speck in the galaxy of the Milky Way. We have discovered over a billion galaxies,
yeah,
a billion, and we're a speck that you can't even see in one. The chances of there being some form of life, no matter what that is, on another planet, it would be stupid and ignorant for us to say that it doesn't exist. In our galaxy, maybe there's not. In our solar system, maybe there's not. I don't know. But on all these other galaxies. Okay. If we believe the Bible, we believe Jesus, we're one species on this planet. If did Jesus go to every other one of these places where they have life? And if so, is he the only way for them too? Or is there another, did Christ, and this goes back to Richard Rohr's book, The Universal Christ, is that Christ, is that God and all that it encompasses, is there another form of this Jesus or this Christ in a different bodily form on another planet? And if so, can they get to heaven or this idea of whatever this afterlife is through that realm or through only, do they have to be a human and come to earth? And how small is our thinking when we start? That's just one, really big question.
Yeah.
Here's another fun one for people that are listening and just want to tease this out, especially if you're a fundamentalist. If God is good, mm-hmm, and he is the source of all, where did evil come from?
Mm-hmm.
If God created everything and nothing can exist outside of his sustaining it, can he sustain evil? Now, there's an easy answer to that, but mm-hmm, and I'll go ahead and give it to y'all. And that is that evil is not, it is the absence of the fullness of what God is.
Right.
And so, which makes a lot of sense and can reconcile a lot of the things that happen in the world that are unjust. If you realize it's just the absence of, and what is God? He is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And so when you take those things out, all that's left is darkness and evil.
Yeah.
Anyway, but those are just a few questions to ask that are bigger than this thing. We would talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
And she would tease it out, and she came up with this phrase that is the only theological statement that I believe anymore. I have one theological statement. All of everything goes on this one statement, and it's God is unfigureoutable. That's it. And it's just, when you come to that realization, it is Pandora's box of who God is.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you can see God in every person,
mm-hmm,
and you can see God's image in everything he created in different shades and colors of what you can see and what you can't see. And it's just a whole lot bigger than my little book that was put together by humans from one tradition. Like,
yeah.
And that is how, what teased it out of us, these deep questions of walking those beaches, asking those questions here.
Mm-hmm.
So we would ask those questions here. And I remember thinking, as we're talking about these types of things and we're taking these walks, like, I feel God more in these conversations than I do standing on a pulpit preaching,
mm-hmm,
people crying,
mm-hmm,
people, you know, singing, and all of these things that we would do, big productions. And I feel like I'm more one with God now walking on this beach than I do anywhere else. And for me, it was bigger. It was that, like, if I could walk these beaches, I could see God every day. Now, you can see God every day anywhere if you're looking for him. If you don't see him, you're not looking for him.
Right.
And so, but for me, I connected there. Mm-hmm. And Andrea has always dreamed of living by the beach. That's her one request.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was like, we're never going to do it until you retire, because you have your dream, and I would never strip that away from you.
Yeah.
And when I realized that my dream was selfish, my dream was, like, the only reason that I had this church is I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be this famous person. Like, I wanted to be a famous speaker. Like, it was me. I didn't really care all the life change that was happening. It was happening because God can use you despite you.
Right.
I didn't care about anything besides how many people were showing up next week. Let's get the numbers bigger. What story can I tell next time? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it was. The whole thing was not to grow a church so the church got big. If I'm being really transparent and digging deep of, you know, what was it? And I've had time to do that. I wanted a big church so that I could be invited to go speak at these big places and people could ooh and ah over what I have built. And it had not, when really it should have had nothing to do with me, but yet in my mind, it had everything. It was all about me building my little kingdom.
Yeah.
And so eventually we came down in 2020.
You had a come to Jesus and Andrea meeting.
That's right. That's exactly right. And we came down and hung out for 2 weeks. My board called me up. Where are you?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I'm here. I'm good. I'm just off the grid. I'm coming back up. That's when I started writing this book, actually, a year ago, this coming week. And I was here.
Yeah.
And I remember just realizing when we left, we looked at each other and said, that feels like home. Like there's just one word to describe it, home. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks later, I talked to the board, how I'm going to transition over 18 months. If we want to transition, personally, I don't want to transition. I'm going to leave, start a location at the beach. And then I'm going to trade salaries with the youth pastor who's here, Corinne. She's going to lead this location while I build that location. And then this will be the broadcast location eventually at the beach, and we'll build my salary back up. And then that's how we'll do this.
Right.
Nope. That we don't want to do that. This is COVID. We don't know what's going to happen. And so I was like, okay, well, let us transition over 18 months. So it's really smooth. I want it to be successful. I want it to continue growing. I don't want anybody to feel burned or anything. That turned into a 1 month transition because they just couldn't, they wanted the Band-Aid ripped off.
Yeah. Yeah.
The board started making decisions out of hurt.
Yeah.
And so a normal transition of what it looks like to start a company and leave a company is not what happened at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like that. And then all the people that made those hurtful decisions on us to my, like we're talking about my family trying to survive. Mm-hmm. And the people that made those decisions, none of them are on the board. They all left. They all left the board after making those decisions. Like they made those decisions and then resigned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, if you're going to make a decision that's best for the organization, stay and serve the organization. It hurt. Like to watch all of that was just awful. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we came here, and because of the way it came about, we couldn't get a loan.
Mm-hmm.
So we're stuck.
Right.
So we had built a house in 2010 in Virginia. Northern Virginia is like high money.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we
yeah.
built a house. And then in 2020, when we sold it way more than we built it for 220. We sold it for 350.
Right.
And we had had all of this equity in it that we had paid over a decade.
Right.
And I still couldn't get a loan.
Yeah. Because no income, no proof of
no income.
Yeah.
With Corona, Wells Fargo was our, was our loan people. They started cracking down on all these things. We couldn't get a loan from anybody.
Yeah.
We toured this place that we live now knowing we can't get a loan. And it was the series of weird circumstances that were difficult. Next thing I know, we walk through this place. We call the guys for sale by owner, been on the market for a year. And he says to us, I guess you want the owner financing. And I'm like, can you say that again? He's like, yeah, you don't want to go to the bank. I was like, no, we don't want to go to the bank. And he was like, okay, I'll do it at 30 years, 4%. And since you have a young family and you're making a move and you're starting out again, like, don't worry about the principal. Just pay the interest until you have the principal and then just start putting it toward it as you want to. Can you put that in writing?
Can you put it in writing and have it notarized, please?
Yes. And that's what happened. The next week, someone tried to buy it. For the first time in a year, they tried to buy it from him. And he said, I've already put a contract. If we had waited, we wouldn't have got a loan and we wouldn't have found a place that we dream about.
What would you say to those out there that get that guttural, I call it a gut feel.
Mm-hmm.
I got to act now and there's no logic around it. What would you say to that?
Go, man, go. There is no set path for anybody. Huh. I just don't believe in that. As a pastor, I never had a calling to do that. If we're talking Bible in the context of calling,
right?
Even Paul, when he's writing, says to those who desire to be a pastor, here's these qualifications or whatever, which again is contextual and cultural, but there's no, like, this is what you were designed to do. Do you have gifts? Yes. Do you have a personality? Yes. Can God use them? Yes. But if you quit tomorrow, it's all about who you love around you, not the things you accomplish, where you're doing it at. You can be the best preacher in the world, but if you're not loving your family, you lose and you suck. Mm-hmm. If you could be the best doctor in the world, thinking you're following the calling, what God's doing, the best missionary, the best clinician, the best whatever it is, you can be the best of that. But if you're not loving the people around you, you're losing. You could be homeless and jobless, but loving people around you, and you are winning. You are doing what God created you to do. The will of God, the call of God, the purpose for you is to love the people around you, and you will change the freaking world. Yeah. And when you add value to people, they will take care of you. God will take care of you through them. I'm telling you, that is the purpose for your life. So you, if you have a gut feeling, go for it. You can't mess up.
Yeah.
Like, it will always work out. It always works out. Like, there is no fail.
Mm-hmm. I have,
as long as you're loving people.
I have incorporated two things. One, purpose is to give and receive.
Yeah.
Receive love. And the second one is I ask myself all the time, and I ask other people, if you knew that you were completely taken care of and that everything was going to be okay, how would you live?
That's it. And that's what you got to do.
Do you know and believe that you're completely taken care of?
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed at how many so-called Christians are so full of fear because they don't, either you trust God or you don't.
Right.
Bottom line. That is black and white. Either you trust him or you don't.
And if you're living or thinking out of fear and God does not give us a spirit of fear, then what spirit are you thinking from and in? It's all up in yourself. It's all up in this absence of God, which is a scary place to live anyway.
Right. Right.
That's definitely a fantastic question to ask, is what the second one that you ask about if you were well taken care of.
Yeah.
If
you knew that you were taken, because that's where it's, you know, and there's no doubt.
That's
biblical.
Oh, you know? 100%.
If you know, 100%. There's no doubt. And it also says the more time you spend in my presence, the more I will reveal to you and greater things will you do than Jesus did.
That's right.
Forget that.
Big time.
The greater things are not in the Bible. Hello, expand and blow your mind. There's stuff out there that people are going to be doing that wasn't in the Bible. Hello, you know, so I could get on my soapbox with.
I'm there. The Bible is not, a box to put us in. It's a base for us to live from and to go live our own story and God's story continuing through our lives. No matter what that looks like, even if, you know, that story is not, maybe you weren't raised in a Christian home or raised in knowing all of this or even believing any of this. Okay, great. God can still live through your life because he is everywhere around you.
Yeah.
Paul said he's in all and through all. Mm-hmm. He's sustaining all. Therefore, he can be discovered in and through all. Mm-hmm. And if people realize that, there is no reason to not go do that thing, that gut feeling that you're doing.
Yeah. What is the number one? I'm going to wrap this up because we could talk forever and we probably need to do other. We will need to do more, like a series together or something.
Let's do it.
But what is, there were one thing that you wanted to tell people or one thing that you want them to learn from you, what would it be? And then I'm going to ask you a couple rapid fire questions.
Yeah. One thing is to love people around you. Mm-hmm. And because if you're loving people around you, you are doing the purpose of God. And it's impossible not to discover God or find God or be with God when you're loving people because you're living like Jesus.
Yeah.
That's it. Love people around you and you'll become a better person by it.
Yeah.
When you don't live life for yourself, don't worry about how much money you made or lost or what this deal or transaction is going to do or what this investment's going to be or if you lose everything or if you don't lose everything or whatever. Like, don't worry about the fact that your, you know, 18-year-old daughter just came stumbling in and she's pregnant and she's high and she's whatever. Like, love her anyway.
Yeah.
Well, love her. Love her and you will make a difference in her life and through her life. It's not going to do you any good not to love her. And so that's just one example, but no matter what your circumstance is, when you love people well, you become a better person and the world becomes a better place because the people around you become better by your loving them.
So good. So good. All right. Let's wrap this up with some rapid fire questions.
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's do it.
All right. Y'all can't see him. Well, they will be able to see you when they go and watch the YouTube version of
Gotcha.
This. But what is your favorite hairstyling product?
Yeah, definitely AG.
AG, AG
is my best. My wife, by the way, that's such an easy question for me because my wife is a hairstylist by trade.
Uh-huh.
That's what she did in Virginia. Yeah. So anyway, AG is the best line. However, she uses infrastructure and I use molding paste. I'm a fan of their molding paste.
Molding paste. Awesome. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite pastime with your kids?
Oh man, dancing for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. And how long do adults dance just for the heck of it, right?
Oh, that's our house, man. Every day.
That's awesome. Yeah. What was your favorite memory as a child?
Oh, that's so tough. Oh, watching Michael Jordan play basketball with my dad. I had the jersey. I used to pray to be black. And one day I kid you not, one day I looked down and I had a mole. And I remember I went yelling like crazy to my mom, like, "Mom, he's doing it. He's doing it." Because I thought God was turning me black. He did not.
So
I'm still upset about that.
Is it safe to say you're a Tar Heel fan?
I am now.
You are now.
I am a very loyal person. And so when I was in the greater DC area, and I did everything DC, and now I'm here, I'm all Carolina everything.
Were you Georgetown or were you Wahoo?
No, I was Hokies.
Hokies, okay.
Yeah. I'm ashamed of that now. That's the redneck school in Virginia.
Right. All right. If you could live anywhere in the world other than the United States, where would it be?
Fiji.
Nice. Favorite spiritual book that's not the Bible?
You Don't Have to Believe to Belong by Aaron Brewer. Probably. All right. This is twofold. Either The Universal Christ by Richard Rohr. Just because it's so mind blowing.
Yeah.
Like it'll blow your freaking mind. I wouldn't consider it a spiritual book unless you're looking at it that way. Braving the Wilderness by Brené Brown. Love that.
Love her. And I love that book. It's awesome. Yeah. All right. Last question. What are you looking forward to tomorrow?
What am I looking forward to tomorrow? Tomorrow is we're going to the Fish Hut Grill.
Yes.
That is what I'm looking forward to tomorrow is the Fish Hut Grill for dinner.
Awesome. Awesome.
That's right. God is all up in that.
I love how you guys have embraced the Crystal Coast as your mm-hmm. home. You are getting ready to start another podcast.
Yeah.
So tell everybody where they can find you on that, because that's not going to be too long around the corner.
No, it's not.
And where they can find you there and where they can find you if they want to reach out to you, support you, all of the things.
So
we'll be in the show notes too. So,
okay, great. So she'll link them in the show notes, but at Crystal Coast Podcast is the Instagram. At Fresh Faith is the ministry Instagram. My personal one is at Aaron Brewer. And you can search Fresh Faith or Crystal Coast Podcast on Google or any podcast platform, and you will find both of them right there.
Tell everybody what the Crystal Coast Podcast is going to be about, because you're going to be launching that May 1st.
May the 1st. So we are talking with business owners, getting to know them, getting to know their stories, and allowing locals and vacationers to go along that journey and get to know them too, in hopes that they will already have a connection and want to use their businesses when they get here, or if they're coming for the weekend from their, you know, maybe it's their second home, or they live here and just don't know. And we've already met so many interesting people, and it's crazy. Like, mm-hmm. like the most famous person here, no one knows. But if she goes anywhere else in the world, everybody knows her, but no one here knows who she is. And I interviewed her the other day and it's crazy. It's absolutely insane. I'm like, "You're the most famous person that nobody knows here." She's like, "I love it that way."
The artist. You're talking about the artist.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, but think like there are people like that here and their stories mm-hmm. and the richness and depth of all of that. Like, there's just so much, like your business boomed, like it just took off.
Yeah.
And I'm going to learn all about that one day. and people need to know that they can come here for the weekend and not just lay on the beach, but go get pampered and take care of their body and learn all those things. And like, there's just so many great great, world-class things here that I didn't even know about.
Yeah.
And I'm learning about them. And Andrea is getting to learn with these people and talk with them and making great connections. And it's so, I can't believe it's a job. Like, it's going to one day, hopefully, be our job. And it is so much fun. It is so fun. And I've only done it like 4 or 5 times so far, but it is so fun.
Isn't it?
It is awesome. I love it.
I want to say thank you so much for doing me the honor of coming on and sharing from your heart, being vulnerable about the belief systems and the breakthroughs and the knowing and being vocal in that and being willing to share it to other people. I want to really honor you guys in that and applaud you for going with the gut.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you guys, I'm going to have all of his information in the show notes, and we'll do this again.
Throw us
your questions that we could cover.
Okay. That would be good. Yeah. That would be good.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you later.
All right. See you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope it inspired you to take action in your life and know that you are a gift to this world just as much as anyone. For more information on how you can work with me or get other resources and materials, head over to my website at www.karenparker.com. Be sure to follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Karen Parker Living Well. If you enjoyed this podcast, it would be such an honor for you to share it with someone you think would love it. Also, it would mean the world to me, and I would be forever grateful if you would just take a minute to leave a 5-star review over on iTunes. Tell me your thoughts and comment on what you gained from this episode. It will help me as I want to bring you value and contribute to what helps you grow and have joy in your pursuit of living well.